are so many great things happening in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis.
It's like in the Book of Esther. God has placed each of us in this local church for a time like this.
We're just all people of God.
You know, we're all human. We're all fallen. We're all sinners.
I think we put on Christ, we put on love.
Put on Christ with us as we learn to witness in new ways, find inspiration in those around us, and look for guidance from the Holy Spirit, our Holy Mother Church, and the shepherds of our local church.
Because we're on a journey.
Continue this journey with us now with another episode of Practicing Catholic.
Welcome to Practicing Catholic. I'm Patrick Conley. Thanks for joining us for another show. As always, you can find previous shows and links to our social media accounts at practicingcatholicshow.com. Death and taxes, the two certainties of life, according to a quote attributed to Benjamin Franklin. No escaping either one of them, right? Well, it seems the Pharisees and the Herodians thought this topic would be a good one to try to trap Jesus in his teachings. In our gospel lesson for this Sunday, the 29th in Ordinary Time, these two groups, the Pharisees, through their disciples, and the Herodians, come to Jesus with a question. But first, who are these two groups? Well, the Pharisees were religious leaders who generally opposed the Roman rule. The Herodians, as far as we can tell, were supporters of the Jewish king Herod, who was, by and large, kept in power by the Roman rule. So you can see how this question is a setup from the start. Any opinion on Roman rule, one way or another, would be sure to conflict with the ideas of one or the other of these groups. And these two groups begin with flattery. Now, I don't know if this was to butter Jesus up, or if, as I tend to think, there was a strong note of sarcasm in their tone. Either way, as we know from verse 18, Jesus knew their hearts. Now, the famous question, is it lawful, according to God's law, that is, to pay taxes to Caesar or not? The Herodians would have thought, yes, and the Pharisees and their disciples, no. Moreover, most of the people sided with the Pharisees, so if Jesus said yes, he would have fallen out of popular favor. Then again, if he said no, he would have found himself in trouble with the Roman authorities. So, the trap is set. Now, I'm guessing you know Jesus' famous response. He asks for a coin to be brought to him, and upon receiving one, asks whose image and inscription is on it. Caesar's, comes the reply. Jesus then instructs, then repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. Now, I'm not sure why, but the next verse is not included in the gospel proclamation at Mass. It tells us what happened. It says, when they heard this, they were amazed, and leaving him, they went away. Now, maybe it's not included so that we too might be amazed at the ingenuity and penetrating, even stabbing clarity of Jesus' words. Give to God what is God's. Of course, everything is God's. But most particularly, it's human persons, you and me, who have been marked with God's image and inscription. Jesus' words here, as always, are words of invitation. You have been granted the power to do with yourself as you will. That's the fact. The invitation is, give it all back to Him. And this is something that must be done in each and every present moment. You can't do it yesterday, and you can't do it tomorrow, but today, now, is the time to give yourself over to God. In doing so, you will find that God will take your life, yourself, redeem and remake it, and give it back to you, that you might continue to give God an ever greater gift of self. It's an upward spiral of self-gift that culminates in perfect loving union with God through Jesus. And let me tell you, when that happens, death and taxes fade to nothingness. Thanks be to God. First on tap today, Newman on tap. No, not the Newman from Seinfeld fame, but St. John Henry Newman. We'll get to know better this great saint through Ron Snyder, the president of the Newman Association of America. Plus, October is Respect Life Month, so we'll look at pro-life efforts in the state and the Save the 12,000 campaign with Kathy Blazer from Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. And we're just a week away from World Mission Sunday. There's a big spread about it in this week's edition of the Catholic Spirit you'll want to check out. Joining us on the show to help connect us to the missionary church is Kathleen Osberger, who has some harrowing stories about her time abroad. That's all coming up on the show today. Let's pause here at the top of the show, giving the show over to our Lord through the intercession of our Blessed Mother. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. St. John Henry Newman is probably a familiar name to most practicing Catholics, but how much do you really know about him? A Minnesota Natives podcast, Newman on Tap, helps answer that question and many more about the popular saint. Joining us is Ron Snyder, president of the St. John Henry Newman Association of America and former Twin Cities resident. Welcome to the show, Ron. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Patrick. Actually, I'm not former. I kind of just go and come.
Okay.
We live in
Fair
the
enough.
Twin Cities and belong to Our Lady of Grace Parish.
Oh, yeah.
And we love it there. We have our grandkids are there in school, and it's a beautiful community.
Well, glad that you're still around in these environs. It's good to have you with
absolutely.
Us whenever you're in town. Wonderful.
Well, and this is where I was introduced to John Henry Newman, was the Twin Cities, in particular, the University of St. Thomas.
Yeah.
Where I did a midlife graduate degree and was introduced to St. John Henry Newman by the founder of Catholic Studies, Dr. Don Briel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's I know he's a big Newman guy. Yeah, may he rest in peace. Big Newman guy.
Yeah, God bless him. And he touched many lives, and Newman worked through him. There's no doubt, and he's still working with us through a number of us that graduated.
Wonderful. Yeah. So what inspired you to form this whole association and start the podcast and everything that you've got going on, all these resources that you're offering about John? I mean, what was the inspiration behind that other than Dr. Briel?
It was stumbling into a giant. As I was kind of midlife and hadn't really dove into the intellectual life of the Catholic Church, you know, I was a practicing orthodontist, so biology was my background. And then I loved theology, and I was at De Montreville on retreat, and I saw Augustine's Confessions on the shelf and realized I had never read it. So I read it then, and it's not easy to read on your own or to pull out all the really caveats. So I started, I had been praying with the Magnificat. And if you read the Magnificat, the meditations daily are a resource of Catholic devotional life, scholars, priests, abbots, you name it. And for instance, today is St. Ignatius of Antioch. And that in itself is a powerful piece of a great church father. And I didn't know anything about these people. And so Newman, I stumble into Catholic Studies wanting to learn more about our faith. And then Newman is front and center, and I didn't know anything about Newman. And so then you start to uncover Newman, and it is a rich, deep resource. Mm-hmm. And, you know, plus Newman is a convert. And so that journey to the Catholic faith is a very convicted one. So he was seeking truth throughout his life. And then I met young adults that were doing the same thing, a number of converts, and it was all these graduate students, and we were all on the same journey together, wanting to learn more about our faith, and Newman was our cornerstone.
Well, count me among those converts who were really heavily influenced by St. John Henry Newman. I was actually studying in Oxford at the time that I really got into Newman, really studied him, and some buddies of mine and I decided to read the Apologia Pro Vita Sua. And that had a huge impact on my own. And I'm guessing his prayers, too, were active in my own contemplation of the Catholic faith back then. And now I have to ask, because obviously he was a very prolific writer and just beautiful, anywhere from to his homilies to poetry to all these very scholarly essays and books that he turned out. Have you made your way far into the whole of Newman's writings?
Well, we do have a weekly group. It was monthly when I was before COVID, and then we went weekly because we can use Zoom. So I have a number of people from all over the country that are part of it. And we have been with the sermons primarily. His parochial and plain sermons is a really important access point to Newman because they're so, like you said, beautifully written, but deeply spiritual and deeply scriptural. But we have read a couple texts together. We did the Apologia Pro Vita Sua. We did do the development of Christian doctrine. We're next going to do the idea of the university. you know, the grammar of assent is incredibly deep, yeah. but very important on how we assent to God. So we've kind of mainly stayed with the sermons. I think that's the really touchstone with Newman is his yeah. sermons.
So just if people are intrigued, I mean, I'm guessing that a lot of our listeners have at least heard of St. John Henry Newman before. As I said in the intro there, he's a fairly popular, well-known saint. But there could be a number of them who have not yet even picked up one of Newman's writings. Where would you recommend that they might begin with St. John Henry Newman?
He's easy to access. The Newman Institute has put everything online that they literally have archived just about everything. And it's at newmanreader.org.
Okay.
And there I would go to his sermons without a doubt. That's a really important starting point. And in fact, I would start in volume one, sermon one. It's titled Holiness Necessary for Future Blessedness. Mm. That in itself is intriguing when you think of the title. It's right from Hebrews, but it is really important for us as Catholics because when you listen to his title, it's talking about sanctity, and sanctity talks about the communion of saints. Well, this is an Anglican writing, high Anglican, and moving towards the Catholic Church. But he put that sermon first for a reason, because he's seeking holiness for all of us.
Yeah.
So holiness necessary for future blessedness.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, it's Victorian English, so it's not easy. But because his sentences are really, really packed with information, and like any great writer, there's no words that are wasted.
Mm-hmm.
But his sermons fall with a main theme. They can be a little bit rigid. You know, he was fighting what I would call intellectual pride, you know, at Oxford, and he was seeing a major change, which we are seeing today, in the rise of a secular world and a dismissal of religious world. So he was also always fighting religious indifference. Hmm. So you can tell by the titles of his sermons that he is struggling or putting those two things forward, pride and indifference. So for instance, he'll have a sermon titled Strictness of the Law of Christ or Religious Cowardness. Profession with practice is another kind of critical one. The moral consequences of a single sin. Secret faults is an all-time classic. Unreal words is another. The danger of accomplishments. So he goes very specific on a theme, and he runs scripture that thread throughout. Mm. But he's always moving with it, the spiritual troubles that we all face, helping us see ourselves as we are. And then he uses very plain words and phrases. So yeah. it's really, really beautiful. And that's kind of what, once you get into any of this, you can't help but share it.
Mm. We are speaking with Ron Snyder, president of the St. John Henry Newman Association of America. And as we said, a Twin Cities resident and Arizona resident, shifting his time between those two places and talking about St. John Henry Cardinal Newman and a wonderful, wonderful resources that are available now. Let's talk a little bit, Ron, about what the resources are on your website, which is newmanontap.com, as I understand it. And I know that there's podcasts, so let's maybe start there. What is actually going on with the podcast there?
Well, this has been a 10-year project. And what I mentioned, we started in our home with young graduate students giving them pizza and beer and wine and discussing an assigned sermon of St. John Henry Newman. And, you know, over the first 5 years of the project, I bet my wife and I had over 100 different young adults in our group. And then we even had, you know, I teach part-time at St. Agnes, and some high school kids would even come. And so you start to see these kids kind of light up, and we have this shared patron. And then we moved into COVID time, and we went on Zoom. And then I was approaching retirement, and I thought, well, I could do a podcast. And so the podcast is similar. I've had 25 episodes. I launch it every other week. And I will interview a guest with a pre-assigned sermon and have them react to the sermon. Mm. So, for instance, Archbishop Hebda was kind enough to join me. And he's been aware of my projects, and he was wonderful. And I had him discuss Newman's sermon, Eucharistic Presence. And what you find is these great leaders of our church were inspired by Newman. You know, Monsignor Shea at the University of Mary has been a guest. Father Jim Reedy, retired priest, longtime faculty in English at St. Thomas, is brilliant. A number of young priests I've had. And then religious life, I have a Sister Kathleen Dietz, who's a Newman scholar. But what it is these scholars and lay people all react to a great mind leading us towards truth. That's all Newman's search was. His entire life was truth with a capital T. And so, you know, my website tries to include all that. You know, you can find background on Newman. I mentioned where to find his sermons. Well, there's a little link there. You can go right to the newmanreader.org. So I did that, and then you have the whole list of the podcasts, along with sermons that you can download that are matched. So my goal is that the listener would actually read a sermon and then react themselves and be moved, you know, by a great mind.
Well, I, for one, am grateful for that, because I'll tell you, this is my experience with Newman, is that, you know, you come across certain things and certain books that you stumble across in the spiritual life, which you feel like I should probably read that, right? And with many of these, I would say maybe 80 to 90% of these, when I think that, I say, yeah, I should probably read that. When am I going to find the time? Da, 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 da. But with Newman, whenever I think of Newman, and even this conversation today, I'm thinking, there's not a weightiness to it. There's kind of he's wooing in that sense. It's like, I want to draw closer to this guy. I want to, it's almost as if I need to know more of what he said. There's just this, it's not so much I should read this as that I want to read this. I guess if you get the distinction that I'm having there.
Yeah. Let me read just a little segment of Newman.
Please.
To give the listeners a chance. It says, and this is so relatable because his motto is heart speaks to heart. And it is relatable to all of our lives. Newman says, here we are tossing upon the sea and the wind is contrary. But in the unseen world where Christ has entered, all is peace. There is no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Nor any more sin, nor any more guilt, no more remorse, no more punishment, no more penitence, no more trial, no more infirmity to depress us, no affection to mislead us, no passion to transport us, no prejudice to blind us, no sloth, no pride, no envy, no strife, but the light of God's countenance and a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne. That is our home. Here we are, but on a pilgrimage, and Christ is calling us home.
Wow.
And that's from a sermon, you know, and he'll end like that. And this will be the scene, you know, a theme of how life has so many trials, but we are actually resting upon something eternal and lasting and beautiful. But Newman does it in such a way with language that is so powerful. 19th century language is just beautiful. So a number of English scholars are attracted to Newman just because he writes so beautifully.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And again, we only have about a minute left here, but I wanted to make sure that we steered listeners in the right direction of encountering your website and your podcast. Remind us again where they can go, Ron, to read and start their journey in this love journey with St. John Henry Newman.
Well, you know, my podcast website is a good start because it's at newmanontap.com. And there I have background on Newman that you can find. You know, Bishop Barron is quite a devotee of Newman. And I have his link to his presentation at Oxford at the Church of St. Mary's the Virgin at Oxford, right after the canonization, Bishop Barron went there and addressed them. So that's enough. I mean, once you get his speaking, and he refuses to go to the pulpit of Newman because he doesn't feel worthy.
Wow.
So, you know, there, and Word on Fire has Newman as a pivotal player. In the church, you can find that as well. So there's great resources to help you. The Pivotal Player piece is an hour-long kind of summary of his life, you know, on site, and it really is complete. So I would go there for sure.
Okay. So, and the Newman Reader, again, that was newmanreader.org, was it?
Org, yes. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
And there's a long website called Cardinal John Henry Newman. .com. It's Father Juan Velez, who has a tremendous kind of effort in the last 15 years, and his website is packed. He even has readers to read little clips once a week or daily, and you know, so there's some rich resources. International Friends, NewmanInternationalFriends.com is the cause behind the canonization, and they're out of Rome. And I have been fortunate through my little journey here to meet all these people. Wow. And it's a very rich kind of resource out there for Newman, because he's touched many lives.
Yeah, he certainly has. Yours and mine as well, Ron. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, but I thank you so much for all of your devotion and your devotion to John Henry Newman, but also your devotion to just the whole process and project of getting his name known out there so that people might be drawn closer to the Lord through this remarkable man. Thank you for joining us on Practicing Catholic, Ron. God bless you in your continued work.
Well, thank you. And Patrick, you have the potential to be a guest for me on my podcast.
Oh, all right. Well,
you got all the equipment. It would be beautiful.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that. All right. Yeah. Very good.
All right.
Check out all the great resources on St. John Henry Cardinal Newman at Newman on Tap Online. The website, once again, is newmanontap.com. Up next, Kathy Blazer from Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life joins us with some insights to help you grow even deeper in your respect for life. We'll be right back.
Answering Pope John Paul II's call for a new evangelization.
We really do appreciate hearing from listeners who tell us what Relevant Radio means to them. We heard from Catherine. She said, Relevant Radio has done so much for my life that I can't imagine going back to the old stations I used to listen to. How boring, how unfulfilling, how dry and empty.
Talk radio for Catholic life.
Catherine says, let me tell you how God is working through you. Little by little, as I listen, I've grown stronger in my faith. This Thanksgiving, I finally had the nerve to encourage my father, who had stopped going to church decades ago, to come back. Before Christmas, he went to confession and has been attending Mass regularly again. No matter what else is going wrong, I can think about it and it brings me great joy. Thank God.
This is Relevant Radio.
Wow. Thank you, Catherine.
In his Together on the Journey reflection earlier this month, Archbishop Hebda wrote about possible support in Minnesota to allow physician-assisted suicide. This comes after the 2023 legislature passed the most extreme abortion laws in the country. All this illustrates that it's on us to protect those most vulnerable and support life in all its stages. Here to talk about Respect Life is Kathy Blazer from the Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life. Kathy, welcome back to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Well, first, for listeners who aren't familiar, why don't you tell us about Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life? Who are you and what do you do?
So we are the largest and oldest pro-life organization in the state. We were actually organized back in 1968 prior to Roe v. Wade. So we've been around for over 50 years, 55 now. And so and we work for life issues. So we are nonpartisan. Do not affiliate with a particular religion. We are specifically focused on pro-life issues of abortion, infanticide, euthanasia. And so that's, we work on three legs. We're most well known probably for our legislative and political action, but we actually do, the vast majority of our work is educational in nature. So we're actually in the process right now of going around the state. We're all over the state doing meetings called Save the 12,000 that talk about what happened in this legislature and then what we need to do to take it back and to work back toward a pro-life Minnesota. So that's a little bit of what we do. We also just launched a Center for Pro-Life Minnesota, so we are really doing a lot of outreach to youth, to churches, and to our different ethnic communities, Latinos, the Hmong, Muslim, to try to, again, bring Minnesota back to a pro-life culture.
Wonderful, wonderful goal you have in sights there. And October being Respect Life Month, What does respect for life mean specifically for, excuse me, for MCCL, and what does that look like?
It looks like a pro-life Minnesota. It looks like a culture in Minnesota that respects life. For us, it also looks like a culture of conversation, a culture of being able to talk about these issues with compassion and kindness and civility. And so that's what we're working on right now. That is our vision right now when we're looking for renewing a pro-life culture in Minnesota. It starts with renewing conversations, to be able to talk to people who we don't agree with, right? We all agree that what happened in this legislature was terrible. So talking to ourselves isn't helping. We need to be talking to others. We need to let other people who have no idea what happened, even people who are very pro-life, know something bad happened, but they really don't know the extent. And so as active pro-lifers, we need to be out there talking to people and explaining to them what happened and how they can actually make a difference today, not next November at the elections, but today and tomorrow, because we are in a marathon to recapture our state for a pro-life Minnesota.
Well, take us into that. So what would you say are some of the things that we can do today for furthering the respect for life?
It's really all about having conversations and being open to those conversations. Obviously, people need to be praying. We need to be praying for our legislators. We need to be praying for our leaders in the government. But we need to be also walking. We need to also be talking. We need to be talking to people and explaining what happened, talking about the extreme pro-abortion policies that Governor Walz and the DFL administration, the DFL leadership, put into place in Minnesota, because people don't realize that we have laws now that allow us to leave babies to die after they're born, that we have abortion up to birth for any reason and no reason, paid for by our tax dollars all the way up to birth. They wouldn't even pass an amendment that said that at 39 weeks pregnancy, it should only be life of the mother, rape, incest, right? That was not even allowed. We have absolutely no limits on our abortion laws here in Minnesota. And we need to let people know that. And then we need to be able to have conversations about why that's not okay, about where people are and what they think. Because as a friend of mine said to me recently, 50% of Minnesotans are pro-life and the other 50% are pro-life. They just don't know it, right? Most people are way closer to the pro-life position than they are to this position of abortion up to birth for any reason, for no reason, for leaving babies to die after birth. Those are not positions that Minnesotans aspire to or agree with.
Yeah, very good. And what are some of the initiatives? You mentioned the Save the 12,000 initiative and efforts that you're putting in now. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that? What's that all about?
Sure. So Minnesota has been sitting at about 10,000 abortions a year for the last 5 to 8 years, probably about 7 years. We've been really plateaued at about 10,000, which is 10,000 too many. But our high was about 20,000. So we really had made tremendous progress. But in 2022, that number jumped to 12,000. So that was a 20% increase, really, in the last 6 months of 2022. And so that's where the name Save the 12,000 came from. But we are going out. We're all across the state. We've been holding meetings since the end of July, going all over the state and just talking to people about what happened, talking to them about some of the victories we actually saw, which are silent victories, super frustrating, because we wanted to see the votes come to the floor and we wanted to win them. But sometimes the victory is when the vote doesn't come to the floor. So as I know Teresa Collette was here talking about the parental notification law, that was in to be repealed in the health omnibus bill. And at the last minute, it was pulled out.
Wow.
That's a silent victory. That's because of the pressure that pro-lifers across the state put on their legislators by calling and writing and emailing and visiting and calling and writing and emailing and visiting and then doing it again and again and again, right? People were just so good about really working hard. And we had this victory that nobody knows about, right? Because it wasn't in the press, right? And there wasn't an obvious vote for it, which is what we were tell them to, you know, vote. You want your legislator to vote no on this bill. And that's what you want to see. You want to see it come to the floor and they vote no, right? So that you can see this victory. But they had a 4-vote majority in the House and a 1-vote majority in the Senate. And if they had had the votes to repeal parental notification, they would have repealed parental notification, and they didn't. So there was this silent victory. There was also a silent victory on abortion reporting. They wanted to get rid of all of our abortion reporting requirements. And again, that was in the health omnibus bill until the last minute. They changed it. We lost some of the things that we used to report on, but the reporting requirements law itself is still on the books. That was another silent victory. We didn't have a hearing on assisted suicide. It didn't come to the floor. Again, they had a 4-vote majority in the House and a 1-vote majority in the Senate and the governor. If they could have passed assisted suicide, they would have passed it. So there were these victories that were, I refer to them as silent victories, and they're frustrating, right? And they make for a feeling of being defeated, but we weren't defeated. There were ways that we did win. And so in these meetings, we're talking to people about the ways that we did win and the ways that their efforts, those continued, diligent, persevering efforts that occurred all throughout the legislative session really did make a difference. And now we need to continue those efforts in having conversations. I often say we have to have a conversation with the person that we swore we would never talk to about this issue again, right? Huh. So yes, listeners, the person who just came into your mind is exactly who I want you to talk to. But in a way that's compassionate and kind and listening, that isn't baiting, that isn't trapping, that isn't necessarily even trying to win, but is trying to open conversation, create thinking, and perhaps leading the way to another conversation. I know you've had Emily Albright on your show. This is exactly what we're talking about. Having those real conversations that aren't necessarily even trying to win, but are trying to find those places of common ground where we can continue to work together to move the laws back to pro-life laws like we had prior to January of this year.
Yeah, we're speaking with Kathy Blazer, who's from Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life, about October being Respect for Life Month and just many of the silent victories, as you put it, Kathy, yes, that are out there that we indeed don't know about, and specifically the Save the 12,000 initiative. What are some of the other initiatives that are going on, or some of the other efforts that you have going on at Minnesota Citizens Concern for Life? I'm looking at your website, and there's thing after thing after thing. So give us at least a few insight into at least a few of those.
Well, I would encourage people to go to our website and go to the Save the 12,000 meetings. Look on there, see if there's a meeting coming up near you. We have them all the way up through January. If there's not a meeting scheduled near you, call us. Call 612-825-6831. We will schedule a meeting in your area. We want to be out there talking to every Minnesotan to give hope, to equip you with the tools to have these conversations, and to motivate and energize you to go out. So if there's not a meeting in your area, we want to know about it, and we want to make sure we get one scheduled so that every Minnesotan has the opportunity to come. And one of the things that these meetings are also leading up to is our January 22nd event. So we always have our March for Life on January 22nd. And this year is going to be a very special year. We are going to have a very visual and impactful commemoration of the 12,175 babies that were aborted in 2022. Each and every one of those babies will be laid on the steps of the Capitol. We will have 12,175 fetal models appropriately divided between races and ethnicity, appropriately divided by less than 15 weeks and then later term abortion. So we'll have larger babies to indicate the just under 700 late term abortions that happened in 2022 just here in Minnesota. And those babies will be laid by the people marching on the steps of the Capitol. And we want 12,000 people there. Because if we have 12,000 fetal models on the steps of the Capitol, and that is seen, and then you look out at a crowd of the 12,000 people who are missing from this state because of those abortions, what a powerful image. And I will tell you that I'm from Maryland, which I refer to as the land of four evenly spaced seasons. We don't do it that way here in Minnesota, but in Maryland, we actually have 3 months. We have 3 months of each. And if I can be out on the steps of the Capitol in the middle of January, so can you. Please come. You are going to want to be a part of this. You are going to want to lay one of those babies on the steps. You are going to want to see this, this amazing commemoration. And it's not going to matter what the weather is. Come despite the weather. Come because of the weather, because it speaks volumes when we have thousands of people in the middle of January at the Capitol. And with that vision, We are going to march into the legislative session in early February, and we are going to tell our legislators, no more, no more. Mm-hmm. We do not want to be a pro-abortion state on the level of China and North Korea. That is not who Minnesotans are. Mm. We are Minnesota nice, and we will get back there.
Mm. Well, it would be a heartbreaking yet, like you said, powerful statement, I can only imagine. And 12,000, that's amazing. And that's, again, Monday, January 22nd, 2024 at noon at the state capitol in St. Paul. Yes. And wow. Well, hopefully that will garner a little bit of media coverage then. I think with a statement that powerful that I would find it extraordinarily hard to ignore, although sometimes the power to ignore goes beyond what I can imagine anyway. Well, any thoughts, or we only have a couple minutes remaining in our conversation with you, Kathy, but any thoughts specifically about, other than these conversations? I mean, I understand the importance of having these conversations with people who, as you said, maybe the person who you swore you would never talk to about this topic, that's exactly the person that you need to talk to. And prayer, you mentioned prayer as well. Anything else that people can and should be doing to deepen their own understanding of and respect for life and what's going on in Minnesota, and then how to get the word out about the goodness of being pro-life.
Right. And the pro-life movement is a movement that is both and. Mm-hmm. We are concerned about the mother and the unborn baby.
Good point.
And so when we really need to know where we stand on really difficult issues like poverty for women, right? We don't believe that abortion is the answer to poverty. We believe that there are answers to poverty, but abortion, killing the child, is not one of them. Mm-hmm. And so we really need to be working on being able to speak what we believe, and that is what is going to enable those conversations. We also need to continue the pressure that we've been putting on our legislators to make sure that they realize we don't want another single abortion vote, and we don't want to see assisted suicide in this state. So the pressure needs to continue. Again, this is a marathon. We need to be running consistently and working consistently and not taking a breather.
Well, I completely understand and support and behind whatever all the things that you're saying and whatever it takes to get like you said, to put an end to abortion in our state, and that we do not want assisted suicide either in the state. Wow. I guess all I can say is, Kathy, God bless you. God bless you and all of your efforts and the efforts of Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, for the pro-life movement in our state. And we will continue to pray, certainly, to have conversations and to educate ourselves. Thank you for all the resources that you make available to us on your website, which is just mccl.org. We're so grateful, Kathy. Thank you so much for joining us on Practicing Catholic. God bless you and your continued work.
Thank you so much, and thanks to all of your listeners for all the work that they do.
Mm. For more information on Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, again, go to mccl.org. To sign up for Archbishop Hebda's weekly reflections, go to archspm.org/togetherontheJourney. Coming up, we'll speak with Kathleen Osberger about the importance of World Mission Sunday and her life-changing experiences in South America. Stay tuned. Our spiritual director today is Father Matthew Spencer.
The Inner Life with Patrick Conley.
Giving us some great advice on how to discern God's will and then how to move forward and seek to do God's will in our life.
And I think this is important, Patrick. Sometimes we imagine that God is putting difficult decisions on us and then watching over us as if he's maniacally waiting for us to trip up and make some bad decision and go astray, and just he's trying to see whether it's going to work out for us or not. And that's not how he looks at us. He wants us to succeed, right? He wants us to persevere in his will. Even if we make a wrong decision, he will help us to get back on track. It's so important to act. And I think we, especially in our own times, have a problem with this, right? We have difficulties with analysis paralysis, where we look at something for so long, right? We're just paralyzed. We can't follow through with it.
Yeah, hang on. Let me overthink this.
It's The Inner Life with Patrick Conley, 11 a.m. Central Time on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to Practicing Catholic. I'm producer Kayla Mayer. Today we have a very special guest to talk with us about World Mission Sunday coming up this weekend. It's Kathleen Osberger sharing her experience in Chile during the dictatorship there in the 70s. Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to be with you, Kayla.
Yes. All right, so let's start with the beginning. What brought you to Chile, and how did you feel going into a country under a dictatorship?
Well, I was at the University of Notre Dame in my senior year when a priest who had been very active in social justice issues on campus and having people have immersion experiences in the inner city, as well as summer immersion projects, working as volunteers with poor communities and living in other countries or in U.S. inner cities. And Father Don McNeil at the university asked me if I would like to participate in a group of students, several of them going to Chimbote, Peru, and another group going to Santiago, Chile. And I said, absolutely, yes. And I was sent to Santiago, Chile in 1975. That was 2 years into the Pinochet dictatorship. And though I knew a little bit about the dictatorship, I have to tell the truth, the program came together very quickly. We didn't have a lot of orientation. And strangely, I had studied in Spain, and Franco, Francisco Franco, was the dictator of Spain. I spent a summer in San Miguelito, Panama, where Omar Torrijos was the general, dictator in Panama. So I just thought this was one more dictator. I was going to be volunteering, teaching in a Marinal grade school, living with three nuns and two lay women. And I said, you know, Mom, don't worry. Everything will be fine. I'll be living with the sisters and teaching in a grade school. What could go wrong?
Wow. Yeah. And just, I don't want to give too much away from your memoir, but obviously something did go a little crazy, a little unexpected. Can you talk a little bit about what you experienced there?
Well, I would say that it was really very difficult for me to understand how extensive, how penetrating the repression under Pinochet was. It was so different than the other countries I mentioned. There was a curfew every single night for all citizens. And you had to be leaving around 10 o'clock at night to get a bus to your destination. If you were found to be outside after 1 o'clock, you could just be summarily executed or taken as a prisoner. It was a very fierce dynamic. There were over 700 spies who were just like local people paid to spy on neighbors and spy on different potential activists or people they were tracking. So even if you were on the bus talking with a friend, you might be worrying about, is there someone? And of course, you couldn't send letters or you couldn't write in a journal. So there were a lot of ways that if you wrote anything down or shared things, might be putting you or someone else in danger. The day I arrived, the sister I lived with, I was living with three school sisters of Notre Dame from Wilton, Connecticut. And Sister Bernadette Ballasty picked me up at the airport, and it was very intimidating at the airport. Machine guns everywhere, watching all the people arriving and scrutinizing them. When I got in the car, I met Sister Bernadette outside. We drove to the convent house and she brought me in and we were having some coffee and I was getting to know her a little bit. And then her voice starts to quiver. And she said to me, well, the others asked me not to tell you about this, but I need for you to know that sometimes we hide people who are being sought by the secret police here in our house. There are people who are in danger and their lives are being threatened, that they would be taken by the secret police, tortured and killed. And I just took a deep breath and I said, well, I came to Chile to learn and I wanted to understand their motivation of the sisters and the lay women in the house and in sheltering people under these dangerous circumstances. And I also felt, that I had come here to understand Latin America. And this, unfortunately, was a vast problem in the southern cone of Latin America at the time. And finally, I realized that very day, well, the sisters are taking a pretty big risk with me, too, because they don't know if I will be a trusted person. So they said they were going to take a break for a while. So I decided to just begin to live my life in Chile as a volunteer school teacher in a Marinal school. And I started my teaching at the school.
Wow. Yeah, that's very intimidating to go into. And especially in your situation, like you thought, like, oh, it's just another country with a dictatorship. What could go wrong? And to just be surprised like that.
Yes.
That's scary, I'm sure, and hard. Yeah, yeah. And I guess leading into this next question here, being in all that turmoil, what role did your faith play in your experience in Chile?
Well, the events moved forward rather quickly. In the middle of October, there was a shootout between the secret police and a number of armed militants known as the MIR, the Movement of Leftist Revolutionaries. The secret police's name was DINA, D-I-N-A. And this was a big deal. There was a big shootout. They were happy to find the headquarters of the leftist group. There was a shootout. A man was killed, one of the members of MIR, and the other leaders were able to flee. Shortly thereafter, though, of course, one of them had been wounded, and his name was Nelson Gutierrez, and he was wounded in his legs. There were two bullets in his legs festering. And somehow he and his wife were able to get into Santiago, Chile, but not without, they were running through the fields. They were not detected. And a peasant woman shouted out to them, and she saw that they were carrying a little young infant, a 9-month-old infant named Paula. And she said, "Can I help you?" And the wife, the mother, Maria Elena Bachman, handed her child to this woman to be cared for. And they went on the run, and they eventually came into Santiago, the capital of Chile, and they made their way to speak with some priest to ask them if they would help them, because he was wounded and he needed to see a doctor, and they needed to be someplace safe in order for a clandestine visit by a doctor to possibly heal his wounds. Unfortunately, when the doctor came, her name was Dr. Sheila Cassidy. She was a British doctor. And when she came to the house, she wasn't able to excise the bullets or stop the infection. So she told the nuns and priests, "You have to get him into an embassy." And of course, that was going to mean, first of all, finding an embassy that wanted to take such a high-level people who were being sought by the secret police, and certainly would enrage the Pinochet government if another government was trying to help them. So the two priests, Father Geraldo Whelan and Father Patricio Cariola, went out to speak at different embassies to see if anyone would take them in. And, well, surprisingly, the embassy that took him in was the Vatican Embassy in Santiago.
Wow.
They knew that he was going to die, and they were willing to help save his life. The people, when they stayed at our house, at the nun's house, where I was staying, they were told not to come in with weapons. They weren't going to shoot their way from the convent out of this situation. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, they came in with hidden weapons and they were found. And then the priest took them and they tossed them in the river. But again, they found new weapons. So somehow during the day while the nuns were working, while we were out of the house, they were having clandestine exchanges. So finally that came to a head. But most importantly, they were then transferred in the trunk of the car, of the sister's car, by the two priests, Father Cariola and Father Whelan, and he was then attended to inside the Vatican Embassy, and they both lived.
Wow. That's so crazy that I have no words. That's an amazing story. Yeah, no words. I'm speechless. Kind of just looking back at those years, how do you feel like that experience shaped you? And specifically in your work, doing orientation for Mary Knoll, what types of things would you talk about and prepare them for in relation to your experience?
Well, I was not, I was able to work with the Mary Knoll sisters in Chile. And then later when I came back, that was a school I was teaching at. And later when I came back to the United States, I was invited by the Mary Knoll Lay Mission Program to help do an orientation to mission on the themes of power and powerlessness. And I had a beautiful number of years, almost 17 years, working with them, with other team members. My college roommate, Mary Beckman, an economist, Otto Maduro, a sociologist, and Richard, I'm missing Richard's last name at this moment. He was a theologian. And Dick Shaw, Richard Shaw, S-C-H-A-U-L-L. And we were team teaching courses with the Maryknoll lay missioners. It was a beautiful period of time. And it's been great, very gratifying. Some of them have been coming up to me on this book tour saying that they remembered me from way back when. So that's been very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're kind of wrapping up our time here, but I want to finish out with the question, with it being World Mission Sunday on October 20th. What would you say to anyone who maybe feels called to mission, but doesn't know where to start, or maybe is feeling hesitant for any reason?
I would say, go for it. Go for it and explore. There are many organizations that have lay missioners. Sometimes they're part of a discernment process for maybe joining a sister's community or a priest congregation. I would say go for it, because if you go and spend a few years, first of all, you're going to learn another culture. You're going to experience opportunities that you would never have to share your life with others and to be welcome into other people's homes that you would never have a chance to be welcome into, and you can reciprocate. It's a very rich experience. Many missioners go and stay well beyond the first set of years that they commit themselves to. Others stay a lifetime. So it's a wonderful way for a layperson to engage with the church.
Mm-hmm.
The worldwide and church, I should say.
Yes, yes. That's the beauty of our church. It's worldwide. And lastly, Kathleen, you have a book in which you talk more about your experience in Chile, and just want to give you a moment to share with our listeners, talk more about what's in that book and how people can buy it if they want to hear more.
So the name of the book is I Surrender, A Memoir of Chile's Dictatorship, 1975, by me, Kathleen Osberger. And it's available through Orbis Books or many other outlets. So it's I Surrender, A Memoir of Chile's Dictatorship, 1975. Everyone says it's a great read. When they start reading it, they can't go to bed at night because they want to keep reading page after page. So I appreciate hearing all those flattering things about the book. They say it's very compelling. It's an easy read in the sense that the story moves along quickly, but it's very riveting. And people also tell me that they're learning a lot about the U.S., the unfortunate U.S. involvement in creating the coup that trampled and overthrew a democratically elected president, Salvador Allende, in 1973 was his overthrow and death. I think it's a very important theme. There was a coup. The U.S. fostered the coup against the Chilean president, who was democratically elected. And we, right here in the United States, are dealing with issues like that, where authoritarian government or possibility of an authoritarian government coming to power, disregarding rules that have been established. And we need to be very aware of these autocratic trends that are in the air. And we need to be active in standing up for what is right. So they can go to the website of Orbis, O-R-B-I-S, books, B-O-O-K-S.com, all together, orbisbooks.com. And it is also available on places like Amazon or other outlets like Target or other places. So it's widely available on the web. And I've been told that it's just come out in Kindle as well.
Ooh, so fancy. Well, you heard her. You can buy Kathleen Osberger's book, I Surrender, A Memoir of Chile's Dictatorship, 1975, on Orbis Books or any of those retailers that she said. Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story.
Thank you, Kayla, and thank you to your audience for opening their hearts to the story and the Chilean people who suffered a lot. Thank you.
Of course. Well, stay tuned. The fall colors are blooming, and Patrick, Paul, and I will be right back with some events to bring just as much color to your spiritual life.
Relevant Radio counts on your support to keep making an impact in people's lives.
Unfortunately, the money that we raise during pledge drives does not cover the entire need.
If you have been touched by Relevant Radio, please call 877-291-0123.
That's 877-291-0123. Or go online to relevantradio.com and make your donation now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And God bless.
Welcome back to Practicing Catholic. So glad you joined us for today's show. And as always, you can always listen to any show you want at practicingcatholicshow.com or search us out on social media at Practicing Catholic Show or on your favorite podcasting platform. Listen to all of our great recorded interviews there. Thanks to Kayla. Kayla, thank you for making that happen.
Yeah, you're so welcome. And don't forget the YouTube. We have YouTube now.
That's right. We have YouTube now. Oh, man. We're expanding
we're
from
right
audio up to
town.
Video. I don't know how I feel about that. I've got a great face for radio, so anyway, we'll see where that goes. We need more of Kayla interviews on the YouTube channel, I think. That's what needs to happen. All right, so we got a Sidewalk Counseling Training Seminar coming up Tuesday, October 24th. That's this coming Tuesday, 7 to 9 p.m. at Revive Church in Brooklyn Park. More information is online, but here's the deal. Pro-Life Action Ministries trains ordinary men and women, like you and me, in peaceful legal methods of saving babies from abortion. How about that? By offering literature and words of truth and love to parents entering the five local abortion facilities. Sidewalk Prayer supporters are also welcome. Again, that's Tuesday, October 24th, 7 to 9 p.m. Check it out online.
22nd Annual Red Mass is coming up Thursday, October
22nd.
That's what it says. No, 72nd.
72nd.
The 72nd.
Yes, there we go.
The light is poor here. It's the 72nd. All right. Well, it's noon at the Basilica of St. Mary in Minneapolis on Thursday, October 26th. All lawyers, canon lawyers, judges, and others interested in the administration of justice along with their families are invited to the annual Red Mass. Reception to follow. Archbishop Hebda will be the celebrant. This special event is sponsored and presented by the Lawyers Guild of St. Thomas More.
And then coming up as well, we have Discernment Day with Bishop Williams. That's on Saturday, October 28th. It will be at Damascus House, an off-campus community of St. Paul Seminarians. Bishop Joseph Williams, along with Vocations Director Father David Bloom, will lead a discernment retreat for men who have a college degree and are discerning priesthood. You can find more information on 10,000vocations.org for that.
Yeah, 10,000. Again, and Father Bloom had to point this out to me. 10,000 vocations come from 10,000 lakes, like Minnesota.
Oh, okay. I was wondering.
Yeah, I never got it until I was interviewing.
Never put it together.
Sorry. Exactly. So it's 10,000, the number 10,000. That's always important to say. So 10000vocations.org is our vocations website for the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis. And just one quick question of going back to the YouTube thing, Kayla. So how can people find us on YouTube? Just search for Practicing Catholic Show?
Yeah. Just search Practicing Catholic Show on YouTube. You'll see our logo pop up. We have two videos up right now on the channel, so check those out.
But more to come.
I'll have to go take a look.
That's
more
the
to
promise.
Come.
I know. Mm-hmm. I need to check it out, too. I saw one, but I didn't see the other one yet. Well, we will do another show next week. Maybe,
boy, I sure hope so.
It will be in audio. Some of it might actually be in video and make it to our YouTube channel. Here's what we got coming up. This would be a good one to put up on YouTube. Archbishop Hebda is back to talk to us about vocations. So he's going to share his insight and his reminiscing, perhaps, on vocations. And then we're going to check in with our old friend Jeff Cavins, who used to sit in this chair, as I recall.
That's
he
true.
This show.
He has sat in a lot of chairs.
He has, and God bless him. I'm grateful that he continued to do it. Well, he's going to swing on by to Practicing Catholic. We're going to check up with him and the work of the Catechetical Institute. That's coming up next week. Thanks for joining us this week. In the meantime, hear the word, receive the grace, and practice the faith.
Thank you for listening to Practicing Catholic on Relevant Radio 1330. Practicing Catholic is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. To listen to past shows, find us wherever you get your podcasts. And stay connected with us. Visit our website, practicingcatholicshow.com, or follow us on social media at Practicing Catholic Show. We'll be back again next week. Go!